Sitting in a living room, sitting on the porch. It's your words gonna light that torch. Tell it in a city park, tell it in a bar, tell it in the backseat of your grandma's car. No tales too pure, our failures lure. The poor house sure wants to hear what's bubbling in your brain.
Hi, this is Jeff Herbach. Welcome to the second show of Tales from the Poor House. It's an October afternoon. Yeah, can you hear that? There's a little man outside. He's wearing a hood. He's blowing leaves around. It's that time of year. We got a group of writers from Mankato sitting all around a coffee table here in my apartment. And we're going to tell you some stories. As always, the show is prompt-driven. The prompt for this week was... this sentence I hate most. All of the stories will contain at least this sentence I hate most. They also might contain a little girl named Greta, a silver money clip, a furry red squirrel, and a blind masseuse who is also fit and has the name Kelly. Guy or girl? I'm Jeff Herbach. I'm the host of the show. I live in Mankato, Minnesota, where it's dark and spooky at night. Have you guys noticed? It's super dark in this town. My story's called I Am Happy. I am happy. Terry is a terrible name. She would tell me I am happy. And so the sentence I hate most. I am happy. Hate is a bit strong, but happy is so weak. I need to balance the weakness with strong language, even if hate isn't exact. Happy is never exact. I don't really hate anything except maybe stupidity. I think angry people are stupid. And happy is a terrible thing to say you are. Terry had a kind heart and a terrible name. Her daughter is named Greta. I say is because Greta still lives, although I don't know her. Terry moved Greta across the city to a better neighborhood where Greta could get a better education. Good education in a good neighborhood. Doing the right thing makes me happy, Terry said, sitting on a chair at our dining room table, her face pale, a signed lease in her left hand. Greta is still alive, I know, because I saw a picture of her in the newspaper. She can talk to squirrels. They do her bidding. That's remarkable, isn't it? They clean up garbage in Greta's yard, and they go to the store and bring home packages of Trident gum for Greta. Citrus-flavored. That was all in the newspaper. They called her the Squirrel Whisperer. I am happy, Terry would tell me. Can you be happy, she asked. No, I'd tell her. Why, she'd ask. Why? Why? Why, I'd say. Why should I? Because, she'd say. Because. Why, I'd ask. Because, Terry would say. The trees in front of my house are filled with insects. I love the sound of their wings. They play a song for me. It doesn't make me happy. I love the sound of their wings. Terry would cry. At night, I'd wake and hear her crying. Are you crying for Greta, I'd ask. I'm crying for you, she'd say. You're a sad man. No, I'd tell her. No, she'd say, her eyes opening wide, light from the streetlight illuminating disks of light blue. Do I make you happy? I don't like your name, I'd say, but I find you beautiful. Can I make you happy? She'd whisper. I'd wipe her eyes with a corner of the sheet. The earth is festering. The worms crawl through it. They turn it. Oxygen pours through the holes they make. The oxygen is replaced by water when the sky rains. The earth smells like a green and brown soap I once used in a shower in Switzerland while my father pressed his jacket outside the bathroom door. Terry is a terrible name. I am happy is a sentence I don't care for. I am happy is a proxy for something else, but it isn't anything. I am satisfied. I am okay. I am not happy. Aren't waves of euphoria by definition followed by negative space? Terry is a terrible name. Terry had a kind heart. I am not happy.
Well, I'd rather be happy than right. That's what stupid people insist when they realize you're right and they're wrong, and they must now reconcile themselves to the fact that you've just proven them to be moronic. This sentence I hate so much because there's no arguing with it. The smarter person, you, winds up both the winner and the loser no matter what you say, as the blissful ignoramus in the wrong skips off toward the sunset, where they would eventually die of radiation poisoning or fall off the edge of the planet if there were any kind of justice in this world. But there isn't. Nowhere I've ever visited there isn't, anyway. This is a relatively simple fact of life, but you should try explaining it to a child. The little girl, who claimed her name was Greta, was feeding squirrels in my park, which I explained is very against park policies. That's why there are signs posted everywhere, I told her. She didn't care. She couldn't even read yet, she said, which was probably true since she was only 5 or 6 years old. I flashed my badge. That usually intimidates kids acting cute to get themselves out of trouble with me. But this half-pint punk criminal just shrugged it off. Are you here with a parent or grandparent or grown-up? I asked the little girl. I need to talk to somebody with proper respect for laws. Ideally, that same somebody could drive you home as you cry because the big mean man, that would be me, just taught you the difference between right and wrong. See this squirrel here? Greta asked me, ignoring everything I just said to her. The big fat one with his furry red tail all puffed up? He kind of reminds me of you. Maybe that's why he's my favoritist. I could have corrected the brat's grammar, but I didn't. I could have kicked her out of the park for emptying what remained of her peanut bag at that squirrel's tiny feet, but I didn't. I could have asked her in what ways exactly my park policeman uniform reminded her of a rodent, but I didn't. I could have done many things I didn't do that afternoon, because I've been a park policeman long enough to know there was a better way to teach this little monster her lesson. I handcuffed Greta, the little girl, to the squirrel she supposedly liked best. Capturing the squirrel version of me was easier than you'd think. All the other squirrels scattered as I approached, but he was so preoccupied, burrowing into the mound of peanuts just dumped before him, that he didn't notice the handcuff bracelet snapping shut around his belly until it was too late. Then I snapped the other bracelet around the girl's petite wrist. Now they were both shrieking like the world was about to end, and as if that was my fault somehow. The little girl ran frantic circles around me, begging to be released and flailing her handcuffed arm every which way over her head. The blur of brown fur trapped in the other end of the handcuffs screeched in ways I was pretty certain weren't natural. I'd never heard such sounds in our park before anyway, not even during mating seasons. All the commotion attracted a considerable audience, including Captain Wenk, my supervising officer. I suppose you have a reasonable explanation for all of this, he said with a frown. Isn't it obvious? I replied, pointing at the peanuts on the ground. I knew better than to mention the girl's earlier attitude issues. Wenk demanded my park keyring, then unlocked the cuffs. First the squirrel, then the girl. Both ran off as soon as they were free. The girl disappeared into the crowd. The squirrel zoomed up a nearby tree. I could have told Wenk that they were going to flee the crime scene. But contrary to what he'd told me when he first arrived, he wasn't really interested in hearing my side of the story. The exact details of what had happened didn't matter to him one iota. When I wrote up the events of that day for my report, he refused to even read it. He'd written his own report, he told me. And no, I couldn't see it.
That was Brian Beatty, Minneapolis author extraordinaire. You can find his jokes, poems, and stories in his fantastic book, Duck. Casey Ulysses Fab lives in Minnesota, where he's working on his accent. He hopes one day to own a liger named Steve. He also hopes to one day write something that does not embarrass him. Casey, what did you use of the prompt?
I believe Greta made an appearance, and Kelly is a masseuse of sorts, but she's unfortunately not blind. I forgot about that.
Oh, that's okay. So this is our first seeing masseuse. All right, Casey.
I don't celebrate my birthday. There's nothing I hate more than when people come up to me and say, "Happy birthday, Walt," or "Feliz cumpleaños, señor," or when my tree enthusiast friends say, "Another ring on the old trunk, eh?" When I was 5 years old, I still celebrated my birthday, though. I wanted to be a police officer when I grew up, so I very strongly encouraged my parents to find me a nice police hat. They took me and my little sister Greta to Showbiz Pizza. I walked inside with my policeman's hat just as the Rockafire explosion came on stage. I almost wet myself, I was so excited. Billy Bob Broccoli was there, and the always impressive Fats Geronimo dazzled me with his musical prowess. I thought birthdays would always be this good. They wouldn't. When I was 17, I was working at a gas station / pizza joint. Since I was under 18, I wasn't allowed to work the kitchen, which was great. The kitchen was hot, and you had to do dishes and load the soda coolers. It was a lot more work than standing behind the counter, staring at the wall of cigarettes all night. And I was all about doing as little work as possible. So when my 18th birthday came around, I kept quiet. I went into work and treated my birthday like flatulence. I hope that if I didn't say anything, no one else would notice. "Hey," I said to my boss as I walked through the door, "what's up?" "Not much," she said. She counted her cash, getting the drawer ready for me. "Hey, I do need you to dust behind the 2 liters tonight, though. You've been kind of skipping out on that lately." "Sure thing, Kelly. No problem." I smiled. After work, my friend Charles picked me up. "So, birthday boy, what do you want to do now?" I shrugged. The Rockafire explosion wasn't the same with Chuck E. Cheese in the band, that Axl Rose wannabe rat. "You want to go to Strong Arms?" Chuck asked. Strong Arms was a local adult book and video store. I nodded. Why not? It's not every day you turn 18. We found it in the back alley off of Collins Road. Black plastic covered the windows and glass door. We looked at each other, nodded, and walked inside. A wall of female toys was to the left. A rack of magazines, some dated 5 years earlier, possibly used, stood in the center of the store. To the right of the entrance was a hallway. A sign saying, "Viewing Rooms," hung from the ceiling. We looked at the videos. I felt wrong for even being there. I felt like the cashier was staring at me with his facial piercings and long hair and beard, judging the new meat that just walked through his door. Charles picked up a video. He looked over at me. A blonde wrapped in an American flag adorned the cover. "Happy birthday, buddy." I cringed. It seemed like just yesterday I was hanging out with Looney Bird, shooting the breeze. Now I was looking at backdoor neighbor 7. In Fresh Fruit of Bel Air 3. Birthdays were weird. They made me old, and now they made me feel dirty. I didn't want this happy birthday anymore. So I panicked. I blindly grabbed a DVD and headed to the counter. I needed to get out of there, but I knew I'd feel guilty if I didn't buy anything, kind of like how I feel obligated to buy gum whenever I stop at a gas station to use the restroom. The man with the nose ring glared at me.
"ID,"
he said. I pulled out my wallet and handed him my license. He smiled. "Happy birthday, Charles. You get a 25% discount since it's your special day." I handed him some cash and drummed my thumbs against the counter. "Hurry up," I thought. "Hurry up." "Charles," a woman's voice said. I turned towards a viewing room hallway. Kelly stood there, her gas station shirt half untucked, her hair, usually in a bun, hung below her shoulders. "Oh, hey, Kelly," I said. "You aren't old enough to be in here," she said. The big man with the lip ring behind the counter spoke up. "It's his birthday today." "Is it?" I nodded. "I'm 18. "Well, did Carl give you your birthday discount?" "I did," the man with the long hair said from behind the counter. "So, what are you doing here?" I asked Kelly. "Oh, you know, I have a side job. Cleaning." Chuck came up to me. "What did you find?" He stared at the video on the counter. "Large and in charge." "Dude." I looked down at the video for the first time. An obese woman stood over a scrawny man. She had a police hat on and a baton in her hand. She did look rather forte. "I like police," I said. And ran out the door.
That's funny.
Your eyes closed. It's only a dream. Time has passed.
Thanks so much to Body Politic from Mankato, Minnesota. Check out their Facebook. Next up, we have a story by John Jadzio, read by our pal, Jenny Adams.
Get in if you want to live. That's what the guy in the truck that looked like a tank said to me. I hate that line. Yes, there were fireballs raining from the sky, and sure, I could hear that roving band of zombies moaning off in the distance, but get in if you want to live. Really? I get that line like 20 times a day now. If you're trying to hook up with this sweet piece of post-apocalyptic ass, you've got to try way harder than that, mister. It's not like I'm even picky anymore, all right? This guy wasn't my type. He had a bunch of matted blood and trail mix in his beard, and his eyes were all kinds of rapey. Still, if he would have gone with something timeless, like,
hi, what's your name?
I probably would have hopped in his cab in a second. I tend to give non-zombies with tank trucks a lot of latitude. And with a couple of reasonable words and a smile with more than two or three teeth, I usually say, let's give our love a shot. What I said instead was, no, I'm fine. I'll just keep enjoying my walk along this beautiful piece of charred earth in my shoes that are made of duct tape, breathing this air that smells like leather, and getting ready to eat my last can of pumpkin pie filling. Thank you very much. After I told him this, the man shook his head and yelled, it's your funeral, lady. Then he peeled out. It's your funeral? WTF. Sometimes I just get so sick of all these unoriginal men saying these absolutely predictable things that I just want to throw something at them, okay? Luckily, in this case, there was a detached arm sitting on the ground near me. I picked it up and chucked it at him. Lately, I've become quite adept at throwing detached arms and legs, so I wasn't really surprised to see the arm land on his cab with a loud smack. I figured this dude would just keep driving away. But then I saw brake lights. And then I heard that telltale beep, beep, beeping, backing up tank truck sound. And then I did what I always do when this happens. I started running towards the gutted Applebee's that I call home. I didn't quite make it there. This guy's truck was fast, and my legs were weak from only eating pie filling for the last month. When he caught up to me, he hopped out of his truck and said, I'm your worst nightmare. I mean, of course he did, because what else would a dope like this say in that situation? He was coming toward me with a knife now, and I blocked a couple of his wild swings with my can of pie filling. And then I turned the can on him. I smacked him with it in the temple once, and then I jumped on top of him. I began to hit him in the head over and over and over until the can broke open, and there's this big mess of pumpkin and brain everywhere. And then I'd ruined my favorite pair of duct tape slacks. After I brushed myself off, I saw the tank truck sitting there, and I was like, what the hell? Why not live a little? The keys were in the ignition, and in the glove compartment, there was a Led Zeppelin CD. Ah! I started up the truck and put the CD in. There was some beef jerky in the passenger seat, and I gnawed on that while I flew off down the road, listening to Robert Plant scream, Oh, I was having a great time. And whenever I saw a zombie, I drove straight into them and watched their bodies totally explode.
Our final reader this afternoon is Clint Edwards, reading a fine, fine story called The Sentence He Hated Most. Clint Edwards.
The sentence he hated the most. Lunges, squats, stretches, it didn't matter what Kelly did. He could not develop his butt. Despite his lack of eyesight, he understood what it meant to look good. A masseuse by trade, Kelly had felt many tight bodies. He rubbed his hands across his abs, pecs, biceps, and admired the taut skin and the protruding veins. But once he reached back and below to feel nothing but butt bone, he felt sick. All I have is a poo hole, he said. A poo hole and nothing else. He felt a longing in his heart for a perfection that God had robbed him of. Kelly was born blind, but because his body was spectacular, his blindness went overlooked. Grasping for walls and counting the steps across the room went unnoticed because spectators were too busy admiring his washboard abs. They say when a person is born without sight, their other senses increase. Kelly found this to be a fact. He could feel the admiration of others when he approached, their eyes fixated on his generous arms and godlike shoulders. From the front, he knew he looked good. But once he passed and people got a look at his butt, he could hear them whisper, "He's blind." This was the sentence he hated the most. It enraged him. No one noticed his blindness when he entered a room. But once he turned his back to leave, they commented. "If only my cheeks were tighter," he told himself. "If only they were more striking and austere, no one would ever know I was blind." When giving a massage, he always worked the butt first, rolling it between his thumb and forefinger, checking if it were tight. Bob was Kelly's favorite client for two reasons. He had never commented on Kelly's blindness, and he had a tight butt. While giving Bob a massage, Kelly often told him that there were many knots in his cheeks, so he could spend more time caressing them. Sometimes he rapidly karate-chopped Bob's cheeks with both hands, so he could admire the way they held firm. But one day, as Kelly stood with his back to the massage table, Bob said, "Good heavens, you're blind." Kelly reached for his cheeks. Bob apologized, but the damage had been done. Kelly now hated Bob and his perfect tight butt. He bought a very furry red squirrel and named him Burrow. Kelly spent weeks prodding Burrow with heated and straightened metal hangers. Once the rodent was aggravated, Kelly directed Burrow's aggression towards small holes in walls and furniture. Eventually, he worked his way up to holes in slabs of meat. Burrow would violently claw his way through pot roasts and large sausages. Kelly brought Burrow to Bob's next appointment. As Bob lay on the massage table, his flawless butt wrapped in a towel, Kelly released the squirrel. Burrow went mad. He nibbled and clawed and thrust his way inside of Bob. And although Kelly could not see the furry red squirrel force himself up Bob's perfect... he could sense it.
All right. Thanks, Clint.
Damn. My pleasure.
And that does it for part one of The Sentence I Hate Most here on Tales from the Poorhouse. Great thanks to KMSU, to the English Department at Mankato State University, to producer extraordinaire Seth Wells. I'm Jeff Herbach. Join us next Thursday at 1 p.m. for another show. Bye-bye.
Sitting in a living room, sitting on the porch. It's your words, gonna light that torch. Tell it in a city park, tell it in a bar. Tell it in the backseat of your grandma's car. No tales too pure. Our failures lure. The poorhouse sure wants to hear what's bubbling.